Hello and welcome to A Journey Through the Bible. I'm Benjamin.
And I'm Johannes. We're two guys from Sweden, currently living in Montana, attending a school of biblical studies with YWAM. It's a 9-month long course where we get to study through the whole Bible. And in this podcast, we just want to share this journey with you and what difference the Word of God is making in our lives.
66 books, 5 times, 9 months. Let's go! Hey, and welcome back to A Journey Through the Bible. Today, we're going to look at James.
James, what a powerful letter.
Yeah, messed up.
Messed up. So no, good.
It's no. So good. It's so powerful. It's so loaded. It just has so much in it. For being 5 chapters, it's so cool how much they offer fit in there. And what a relevant topic, too.
Yeah.
From their time till ours.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about, well, there's a lot of nuggets of wisdom in there, lots of things to just ponder upon, but yeah. Then really a punch in the face on what is faith and what is, like, how do you actually define that and live that out?
Yeah, it's a kind of a complicated. He's talking about some topics that Paul would say very different things, but at the same time, I think they might have the same idea in the end.
Yeah.
They just use different language, which is cool, because most of the New Testament, Paul, besides yeah. the Gospels, but uh-huh. So it's cool to see someone else talk about similar things. So
yeah.
So who talks about these things, Johannes?
All right. So I think we both agree that this letter of James is written by James, Jesus's brother, Jesus' half brother.
Yeah. There is a lot of theories who this James would be. We both kind of believe that it would be his half-brother.
Yeah.
So, Mary and Joseph's kid, most likely.
Yeah,
exactly. Many other people have other thoughts on that there is kids from previous marriage or new marriage, or that Mary doesn't actually have any more kids, and there's a lot of different beliefs around that.
Yeah, a lot of different things, and there actually, I mean, there are several Jameses in the Bible even, but I think church history has only really put 2 Jameses forward, and then you also have, could it be an anonymous author just using James's name?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But I think we both landed on James, Jesus' brother.
Yeah, we just thought that made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Funny thing is that if we now believe that it is James, this book would be written, actually the first book of the Bible.
Yeah.
Or the New Testament.
Of the New Testament, yeah, not the Bible, but the New Testament. Yeah, that's kind of where we landed, I think. I kind of said somewhere around 45 to 49 AD. Yeah.
So just after the persecution started with Stephen after his martyrdom,
uh-huh.
But pre-Jerusalem Council, which we've talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Because exactly. He just doesn't really address those things. He doesn't really show those questions in this book,
mm-hmm.
which most likely would have been just resolved with remember Jerusalem Council.
Yeah.
Because he would have been there. So
yeah, exactly. And he died around 61, 62 is what the historian Josephus says. So mm-hmm. at least before that. But then again, I saw some scholars who were like, no, it's written in the 150s.
Yeah.
You know, but
there is so
then
much
we have
there.
A different author and yeah. stuff like that.
So who was this written to then?
Yeah. So it begins by saying to the 12 tribes in the dispersion.
Uh-huh, who is that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are a lot of different ideas. Likely what I landed on is that it's Jewish Christians who live outside of Israel or outside of Judea. They've been dispersed probably because of persecution, could also be remnants of Israel after the exiles who are living out around the world. Then indispersion could also be like a metaphorical thing where it's like, these are the believers of Jesus among the Jews.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, a lot of different ideas. I kind of landed with the Jewish Christians who have been dispersed because of persecution.
Yeah.
And living around the Mediterranean, probably in like modern day Syria or Turkey-ish.
I add a little bit to that. I think that too is the original reader. But I also, just reading this book, I'm just getting more and more convinced that James had a bit of a bigger idea than to just send it to the original readers. That this is what's going to be a letter written or read for generations to come. Maybe not to this day when he wrote it. He maybe didn't have the idea of that, but for sure I believe that it was written to be spread.
Yeah.
Just because it's carrying a message that is so vital in the Christian faith.
Yeah, and it's relevant back then. It's relevant to us today. It's been relevant throughout all history.
Yeah, super sick. So should we talk a little bit about structure? How this book is built?
Yeah, so it kind of has a little bit of an interesting structure.
Yeah, for sure.
In the way that it's maybe not as linear as other letters or books of the Bible, where it tells one story from the beginning to the end. Okay. But rather, he has a message that kind of radiates out of chapter 2, verses 14 through 26. That kind of becomes the foundation for understanding the rest of the letter.
Yeah, it kind of sets up the whole book.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting.
Yeah, so yeah, let's talk about that piece for a little bit.
Yeah, so most Bibles would probably mention this as faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
Which would be a very important verse for this book.
Yeah.
Verse 21, I think.
26,
sorry. For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead.
Yeah.
How does that line up with what Paul says?
Yeah, so that kind of sounds like works-based salvation, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we don't really believe in that, do we?
No, so Paul is a lot about salvation comes by faith alone. Faith in Jesus Christ, that's where you have salvation, right?
Yeah.
But the question is then, is that just a mental exercise or?
See, I don't think Paul looks at it as a mental exercise. Mm-hmm. For him, it's becoming faith, becoming a person of faith.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a little bit more than just in your mind saying, I have faith. You're not saved by works, but it requires works to show that you're faithful and have faith.
Yeah, and I think what James is landing in is kind of that your works will actually show what kind of faith you have.
Yeah, for sure.
So the faith...
He kind of defines faith more than anything else.
Yeah, and faith, I think in this book you see that faith isn't just a separate part of your life that's somewhere over on the side where you have Jesus in a nice little box and you believe in him and then you go on with the rest of your life just as normal. But rather, faith becomes the foundation from which you live the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it defines everything that you do.
Yeah.
And so your works is kind of the fruit of your faith. And so depending on what works you have, what fruits you have, it kind of defines what your faith is.
Yeah.
Defines what foundation you're actually standing on.
And it's kind of cool. Verse 21 actually talks about that with like Abraham, our father, just justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar. It's a question. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he didn't necessarily even have the concept of faith as we have it.
Mm-hmm.
But his faith was shown in his works.
Yeah.
So James is kind of defining there. It's like faith actually requires that we're living accordingly.
Yeah.
Because today, especially today, I think it's super relevant because we usually tend to just say things, but do we actually live out to them, up to them?
Yeah. And this book, I think, is full of little hints at them not really living out a faith that is according to Jesus.
Yeah, no, they have some weird ideas.
Yeah, and they do a lot of things from self-ambition, and kind of seems like there's a lot of jealousy.
Yeah.
And these homies seem to also be going through some type of testing and persecution. If you're looking at chapter 1, verses 2 and 3, I think, it says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness."
Wow.
So they seem to be going through some type of testing of their faith.
Yeah.
And I think James is just calling them out and saying, you guys are not, like, the faith you're showing in this testing is just not the right thing.
Yeah.
And so, for example, one of those things is chapter 2, verses 1 through 13, where they seem to be showing partiality in the church.
So, oh, yeah.
Whenever someone in fine clothing shows up, they say, "Oh, you sit here in a good place," and they give them the best spot in the church. And then someone who is not as rich,
yeah,
shows up, and basically they're like, "You stand over there," or you get a lesser place.
Interesting.
And so they're showing partiality, yeah, towards the people who are rich, and likely because they want their money.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's very, very interesting. I'm like, I'm just just thinking of our life today.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Maybe we don't necessarily do it exactly like that, but we see that in our churches today too. So it's relevant. It's a relevant, yeah, book for us.
Yeah. And in our private lives as well. Like, yeah, who do I prefer making friends with?
Yeah.
Is it someone who I know has, like, influence, who's popular in the community? Or would I make friends with and sit with someone and talk with someone who maybe needs it the, yeah, more? Needs it the most.
And that kind of goes back into that original thought that James is presenting later on. Faith. What is your faith built on? How, yeah, does this look like? It all points to that. It comes back to, how is your faith shown in your life?
Yeah.
Wow. What is on the other side of this main idea?
Yeah, we see some other things about taming the tongue. I think, yeah, that's a popular James thing to talk, yeah, about.
Words of power. Words, uh-huh, of power.
Yeah. And it's true. He's really talking about how,
sure,
the tongue is the smallest part of the body, kind of, but it steers the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the rudder on a ship.
For sure.
It's small, but it sets off, like, it controls where the ship is going.
Yeah.
And so, and perhaps there is something going on in this church where they are just talking out of, like, I don't know, maybe they're gossiping against each other.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of things going on, but he's like, hey, be careful with your words, like, show your faith, show that it's active even through your words.
Yeah. And here is a famous warning too against, or towards, teachers, that they will be judged with greater strictness, and that, mm-hmm, comes all down to because they have power, what they speak have power in the community. So, yeah, it's just a warning and a setting up people for success to, mm-hmm, not use evil in their speak, but to remember that what you say is powerful.
Yeah.
So speak truth, speak life, show your faith through your words.
Yeah. 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 This letter really calls out to your faith to not just be, you know, something that's compartmentalized, I think is the word. It's just not like some part of your life on the side, but it's actually where everything else flows from. And it might sound harsh, and I don't think that's, like, I don't think you're not saved if you say something that's hurtful to someone else.
No.
But what responsibility do you take, and where does your faith show, like, in asking for forgiveness,
yeah,
or, like, realizing, sure, that, oh, that was actually wrong, and I need to repent of what I did,
uh-huh,
and try to live my life more like Jesus.
Uh-huh. It's basically setting us up for living like Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Super cool.
Yeah.
That's why it has earned the nickname of the Proverbs of the New Testament.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there are so many things in here where you could just read it over and over and over again and just ponder on it.
I did a 30-day read when I read it once a day for 30 days. It's phenomenal.
Oh my gosh.
It's many years ago now, but it's a book that you can do that with. Just sit and over and over and over again read the same text, and new things are going to show up.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, and I would encourage all of our listeners to just take time in this book. Don't read through it once really fast because it's a short book, but actually like take time with each chapter, even each paragraph, to just like meditate on it for a little bit and read it over and over and let God speak to you. There's a lot of good things. And a lot of it, I feel like, as we move on, maybe a little bit in chapter 3 and 4, even 5, is like, what's my relationship with the world?
Yeah, for sure.
And in this church, there seems to be a lot of selfish ambition. They're really trying to make themselves great. They're trying to earn riches in this world.
Yeah, and they judge each other hard, too.
Yeah. And so, but this book is really calling out like, hey, you need to actually live out your faith in Jesus Christ. And for me, one of the really cool verses is in chapter 2. If we go back to it, I think it's in 15, 16. If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that?
Yeah. And yeah, that's so prominent.
Yeah.
And so important to understand for the rest of the book too. But it just explains that idea so well.
Yeah.
It's like your faith, that kind of really gives the idea there. It's like, if you have all these things, why don't you share it with others?
Yeah.
Your faith should be represented in your actions. You should live out that.
Yeah.
Very, very cool ideas.
Yeah.
Very challenging.
Very challenging.
I'm not the best at doing this.
Me neither. I'm growing.
But it is super cool to see how the Bible is dealing with those injustices.
Yeah.
I think that is it's a good book to really challenge our thoughts, especially as our churches are growing. Yeah. We see pastors that is growing in riches and all those things, and churches becoming really rich and influential. So we also gain our responsibility in that. Like, what do we do with all this?
Yeah.
How do we take care of the poor? What do we do as a church community to care for the poor and take care of those in need?
Yeah, exactly. I think you should be able to look upon a church or a set of believers, a community of believers, and see just kind of by their actions, how they act, that wow, these are believers in Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh. And I think that comes down to, like, that's not the topic of the book, but even in generosity, like, how do you show generosity as a person? Do you show generosity to the unknown people, to your buddies, or do you not show generosity to anyone?
Mm-hmm.
And generosity is like outrageously giving. It's not just giving that 1% of the extra money you have. It's like, how do you really show this? Yeah. How do you give all?
Yeah.
Because Jesus gave it all.
Yeah, he did.
That's our raw model of faith.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He was willing to sacrifice all.
Yeah.
To go where he needed to go.
Yeah, exactly.
To die on the cross.
Yeah, and for others.
Yeah.
It wasn't for himself.
No.
It was purely for others.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So thinking of that, we're maybe giving 10% of what we get as a generous offering to our church. Jesus gave 100%. How do we give 100%?
Yeah.
How do we get there? maybe start with 10 and slowly aim yourself up.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not just money. It's time and it's energy and it's even attention.
Yeah.
Like, do we even give 100% attention to our church when we are in church?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or our friends when we meet our friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these are some these are some heavy questions to yeah. wrestle with and look at my own faith and like, okay, where am I actually at?
Yeah.
How am I living out my faith? Am I allowing my faith to influence my actions?
Mm-hmm.
And even looking at my actions, like, what does that say about the faith that I have? And is there something that I need to look into in my faith to understand maybe why I'm acting perhaps not in a biblical way always?
Yeah. Interesting.
And how can I look more like Jesus?
Yeah. And these are things that you can see in chapter 5 that the author is calling us out to. He's calling us to live a righteous life. To be willing to suffer, to walk in the righteousness that we have been given.
Yeah. Yeah. What a letter.
Yeah.
So short, like 4 pages.
Yeah.
But packs a punch for sure. Yeah, there's just so much in there to ponder upon, and we could almost go through each paragraph to see and like unpack it, because
yeah,
there's just so much to ponder upon, I think. Mm-hmm. And not everything is perhaps super clear at the first read. Like, no. You need to read it a couple of times, and
you maybe even need some help from other books too to yeah. really grasp the concept.
Yeah. And sit down and just ask God.
Yeah.
Be in the presence of God and just, yeah, have a good cup of coffee or tea.
Exactly.
And just ponder for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I think, really, to make it clear, we don't believe that salvation is work-based, but we believe that faith is shown how in your works.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good challenge for all of us to really think of that as, how is my life actually representing the faith I'm carrying in my mind or in my heart?
Yeah.
Where does my life line up with the words I'm speaking?
Yeah.
And this book is just a call to live honest and truthful in these mm-hmm. these ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And to look like Jesus uh-huh. in everything you do.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, guys. I hope you guys have a phenomenal week and really tune in and read James and take this week of just exploring the word of James.
Yeah.
And have a great week.
Week. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And thank you to everyone who's been supporting us in prayer and financially, and yeah, allowing us to be here to study the word, to really dive into it. It's such an honor and a privilege.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good week. See you next week.
All right. See you next week.